often imitated, never duplicated. This is the one and only Fash the Nation, your guiding light in a sea of degeneracy.
Hello and welcome to the bonus edition of FTN 298. I'm Kufans McFeels. I'm here with Jarms. And are the free fags gone? These faggots gone? Yeah. All right. Well, let's roll. Hey, Chads. This is your bonus.
Hey, and unlike, I just have to add, unlike the green rooms or the elite level access tiers at some of these conferences, such as APAC and CPAC, you're guaranteed not to catch the corona from listening to us.
Yes, this is a bug-free zone. And so, we wanted to talk about China, and talk about the nuts that has been done or that needs to be applied when talking about China. And I think a lot of people, most people have pretty good takes on this, which is that China's lying about its numbers of its overall infections and deaths. But that's pretty much where we should leave it. The idea that China's government must be destroyed, like people in Conservatism Inc. and their apparatchiks are calling for, and that Xi must pay the price and finally answer for all this. It's like, no, we can have an honest critique of China and how it handled the coronavirus. But the idea that China used its full power of its regime to stop coronavirus in its tracks. No new cases, no new deaths. This is like plan trusting in Trump in the modern era. The idea that China has had no new infections is just silly. Like, if you want to make the point about China's draconian measures, you can do that. And you can even do that by saying that, let's say that coronavirus numbers are five times higher than China reported. You could still make the argument that it's tough to make the argument like where the numbers are today, but you could say that they slowed the rate of infection or slowed the deaths. But how can you even do that? I mean, who remembers when they changed their data gathering methodology, right? Remember when they changed, like there was this steady uptick, and then they changed their methodology, and then the cases just went down, right? It was like 4,000 a day, and then flat, and then nothing. And this idea that happened was a viable cope that people were doing for a while. And look, if it were true that China employed draconian measures, wave magic wand, no more deaths, no more infections, I'd love to believe that. But the reality is that they didn't close their borders. So while they may have taken draconian measures inside of the country, they were not willing to make the macro level sacrifices that would have caused a lot of problems with their economy. Now, the downstream effects of China closing its borders the moment they knew there was a problem may have created even more problems for our supply chain. I'd say let us live with those rather than letting those people escape China and come back to the United States. Like, you know, like the gigantic State Department chartered aircraft that brought all those people back in. And then, you know, what do we do when the plane lands? Oh, we'll just let them go home. I mean, they're fine, right? Right. This is kind of silly. I mean, so you can say, yeah, China did more than everybody else. But then once you saw what has been happening in Italy, and we have a lot more, tangible data to show that China's cases probably didn't go from 4,000 a day to 100 a day in the matter of a few days. Remember that? And China's new cases and deaths probably isn't zero now. We don't know what they are. And so, yeah, we can still hang our hat on the argument that the only response to these problems is extreme authoritarian measures, and they're not really that extreme. It's just, you know, taking control of the government. You need a strong person in charge. But let's not go overboard and buy into the narrative that, yeah, there are no deaths and it's totally been eradicated by this, because that's just not true. What's the right way to say this, James? It cheapens the argument. It cheapens the way, the context in the way that you're making the argument, and you just look dumb. So don't do that. I think most people, And I'm strawmanning a little bit here, but I think, you know, I think most people, because there's a lot of people, you know, you say you're like, I'm sure most people get this. And then you spend 5 minutes out in the ether and you're like, yeah, people don't get this. People don't understand what's going on. And but again, it's like, this is not, you have to take a balanced approach. I know a lot of people have a hard time with taking a balanced approach to things, but you can criticize China for the number of deaths and the number of recoveries and how they handled this crisis by maybe not closing their borders without carrying water for neoconservatives in the United States. You can also praise the Chinese for closing their borders or for closing down Wuhan and trying to contain the disease without going overboard and pretending like it was the most magnificent stroke of political genius the world has ever seen, and that they have completely solved the problem and take everything that the Chinese say at face value to own neoconservatives. Like, that is also dumb. I would prefer to actually analyze the data sort of intellectually honest way. And what we do know is that there were screenshots leaked and that the deaths probably were five times what we saw, including the number of cases. But I think Italy has clearly disproven the notion that China solved this problem and case closed and all done, nothing to see here. And I think America is going to staggeringly, outpace, unfortunately, the problems that they're having in Italy. We're certainly on the road to being there. And to me, what does this mean? Like, China secretly had a vaccine and they solved the problem, or like what? I don't know. But I suspect that China has far more deaths, far more cases. And the idea that there are no new ones, that just doesn't make sense, given what we know about how this thing spreads.
Right. Yeah, and we did the math on this a few weeks ago. And the rate of infection, you would have to believe, if you believed the Chinese narrative, you'd have to believe that it was spreading five times faster in Italy than it is in China. And now you don't even have the argument of saying, well, Italy was still, everything was open and China was quarantined, so that's why. No, at this point, both have employed fairly stringent quarantine measures, especially in the parts of northern Italy that were the hardest hit by this. And they're still seeing new infections. They're still seeing new cases, and they're still seeing new deaths. So to say that these measures were the magic bullet miracle cure is, of course, wrong. But yeah, that doesn't mean that these are not still the right thing to do, right? If you had two Chinas, right, two exact experiments, and in one China, you do what they did, and they close down Wuhan, they stop almost all travel, keep people indoors. And in the other China, you do the slow roll that's been done throughout much of the West and in the U.S., you would absolutely see an astronomical difference in the amount of cases and deaths but looking at these two controlled examples. So, yeah, it's not to say that what they're doing doesn't solve the problem. It does, but that doesn't mean they're telling the truth. I mean, zero new cases? That's incredible for them to be claiming that.
Yeah, I mean, this is a country with 1.4 billion people, and they reported outbreaks in 34 different regions, with the Hubei province reporting 67,000 cases and 3,000 deaths, or a deaths per cases ratio of 4.55%. The other 33 provinces reported 13,000 and 119 deaths, or a deaths per cases ratio of 0.9%. Like, these are totally out of line. Like, it just doesn't make sense, even if they managed to close down Wuhan totally, and they didn't. I mean, they did. Again, this is not people have to, like, turn off the light switch brain or, I don't know, evolve into being a complex circuitry brain. But you have to be able to understand that, yes, China did a much better job at handling this, but we don't really know what the numbers are. And so I'd rather not use them as potentially the example of how to deal with this, because they've said this again, and I'm going to use the rhetoric over and over because it works. It still works and it's still true, is that if China really did experience this miraculous recovery, share the results with everybody. And don't just say, like, well, door shut. Like, that's not the only thing that they did. And, you know, they changed the way that they counted the numbers. It's like, all right, well, why did you do that? And then they fired two Communist Party officials in that region and replaced them as the numbers were getting worse. And as we pointed out and detailed at the time, China faced the same catch-22 that the United States did, which is that if you rip off the Band-Aid and deal with this right away, immediately, you run the risk of crashing your economy and dealing with a whole bunch of damage. But maybe it's worth dealing with that earlier on. What they found out later was, yeah, we can't just tell the world the truth. Because see, what happened was the Chinese were trying to react in a way to what they did during SARS. They actually covered up the SARS outbreak at the beginning. And now with the SARS outbreak in the early aughts was much more minimized compared to what we have with this. They were trying to take the opposite course. To their credit, they were taking draconian measures immediately and also telling the world exactly what was going on. But I think, as we're seeing things play out in Italy, is that this is a far worse epidemic than coronavirus. I mean, it's the same SARS, it's the same type of virus, but it's much worse. And they ignored it the first time, and it became a problem, and then the world got angry at them. And now, so what they did was, all right, well, we're going to tell people the truth about this, and we're going to deal with it right away out of the gate. And that's good. That's what they did. But then they changed their counting mechanism halfway through, and then we went from 4,000 new cases a day to a couple hundred cases a day. And it's like they've done the opposite of what they did. They've evolved in this sense. They've done the opposite of what they did to deal with SARS in the early aughts, which is now what they've done is they have figured out a way, I believe, until I'm proven wrong, and I'll happily admit that I was wrong, is that they told the truth, and then they pretended as though the problem solved itself, because they were able to solve the SARS epidemic pretty quickly, but it was a disease with entirely different characteristics than the one that we're seeing now. They were able to actually eradicate it very quickly. But what we're seeing now is a much more enhanced, much more dangerous version of that. And look, again, if we wake up this week and we see the cases in Italy go from where they are now to steadily falling, and their graph starts to look like China, because they're in a similar lockdown situation in Italy now, then, you know, I would expect Italy to improve. I mean, you could maybe make the argument, I think it's a cope, that China did X, Y, and Z and everybody else did none of X, Y, and Z, but that's not true. They've contained this as best they can, and it keeps on getting worse. So, yeah, I mean, the idea that China is telling the truth here and must be believed at all times, and it just doesn't make sense at all.
No, and I think that the Chinese knew how viral this would be. Obviously, they knew how viral this would be. And internally, they knew how infectious it would be. And they knew that it was going to become a global pandemic very quickly. And with this change in the accounting procedures, which took place in, what would that be, late February, early March? I believe it was late February, where they changed the way they were counting cases. They knew that within a few weeks, this would no longer be a story about China anyways. They knew this disease had already gone international, and people were going to be turning their focus towards the rising cases in Italy, rising cases in Europe, in the United States, and they knew there would be less scrutiny towards them as they underreport the amount of cases that actually are occurring there. And so I think they figured they could get away with this. And it's working to a degree. I mean, you're not seeing in the media much focus on China much anymore. You're certainly seeing neocon agitation towards it, and you're seeing conservative media start to attempt to astroturf this groundswell of rage towards China for the China flu or the Kung flu or however they're describing it. But people are much more focused now on their neighbors and on their family here in the U.S. than they are on what's going on over in China.
Yeah, well, and I mean, going back to the SARS piece as well, is, you know, they said the silence on the part of authorities during the early stages of SARS actually helped create a rumor mill that sparked panic in several major cities and brought their economy to a standstill. And so they were trying to learn from that. But this time, they have had people in China are cracking down on people who are trying to spread news of the disease now, like in the aftermath. So they've been, you know, social media has been awash right with cover-up claims, and China is trying to stamp those out. And so, you know, then you have, you know, whistleblowers dying and things like that. And it's like, well, if you did a good job in the draconian measures that you took solve the problem, again, what is the purpose of covering this up? And again, I understand there are going to be political, even if China did a perfect job, which did not happen. But even if China did a perfect job, there's still going to be political dissidents in that country who say China did a bad job. Like, we get that. We understand that. But that doesn't seem to be borne out by the data. And you're not really seeing this turn out this way in these other countries. So you have conservatives, again, turning to this argument about, you know, Senator Tom Cotton, we will emerge stronger from this challenge. We will hold accountable those who inflicted it on the world. Like, what the fuck does that even mean? And why are we even talking about this now? Other than to shift the focus, make China the boogeyman, turn this into wartime rhetoric, and make Donald Trump a wartime president, and turn the focus away from the actual infection and the spread of the disease and everything that's going on. It's, you know, it's another reason, we talked about this on Jazz and Jesse as well, it's another reason why Donald Trump is doing this whole bit about calling it the Chinese flu and Kung flu and everything else, is to distract people from the actual task at hand. It is to make people focused on this fake and gay, like, you know, boomer racism against the Chinese. Certainly the Chinese have a lot of problems, but Donald Trump is getting people really invested in the xenophobic racism a la 2016 and distracting people from the real problem, which is the economy and its fragility and the fact that it's set up to take advantage of you and that you're not actually going to get taken care of by this government.
Right, and that you're going to be running out of food and money in the next 3 weeks, and there's nothing that's going to be done for you. And they are attempting to channel people's passions and anger at this, at what's going on, at what they're experiencing in their lives. They want to channel that towards demand for war, this demand for punishment against China. They want people to be mad at China and blaming China as China's. They're the real reason that you're out of a job. They're the real reason people are getting sick. Blame the Chinese. And to prevent this from happening anytime in the future, we need to take decisive action now against Xi Jinping and so on and so forth to distract people, as you said, from the fact that this government, our government, is actually mistreating them way more than the Chinese ever have, but also bungling their response. I mean, the actions of the U.S. government are having a more negative impact on Americans than anything the Chinese have done as part of this.
And look,
including covering up the numbers, because at this point, China covering up the numbers, it's like, all right, yeah, that's bad, but also we need to stop Americans from getting sick.
Well, and this puts it in very simple terms so that people understand. I care about China lying to the extent that it benefits people in the United States to know as much as they possibly can about this disease and what the trajectory might look like. That's all I care about. China can do whatever the fuck it wants. Give China whatever the fuck it wants. Well, no, don't give China whatever the fuck it wants, but let China do whatever it wants. Let the Chinese people be Chinese people. If they encroach on us, then that's a problem. But otherwise, like us over there stoking resentment and getting in the middle of the Hong Kong protests, like anybody who's jumping on this Tom Cotton, Donald Trump, Jack Posobiec bandwagon that they're trying to push here, you know, Jack Posobiec is out there. Trump should pull the press passes of every Chinese propaganda agent in the United States immediately. It's like, yeah, Jack, now do Israel. Oh, yeah, you're not going to do that? No. You're not going to do that. And so, yeah, that's the extent to which I care about China lying, is that I genuinely care about stopping the spread of this disease. And all they care about is obfuscating this, making China the boogeyman, protecting Trump. And this is the absolute state of conservatism. There are some unintended consequences, I suppose, maybe benefits from this disease. And, you know, one of them is that it just totally pulled the wool off of conservatism, as if it hadn't been pulled off already. But the whole thing is just a shit show, and it's being revealed for what it really is. And I hope the crashing stonks and everything else that's going on result in Donald Trump losing the election. When you think of it, like forget all of the other failings that Donald Trump has done on immigration and everything else. The fact that he, through his son-in-law, in conjunction with his son-in-law, is bungling this on purpose because he wants to try to save the markets, and he's only trying to get serious because he wants to try to save the markets, and he doesn't give a shit about you, he doesn't give a shit about your well-being, doesn't give a shit about your family, you know, this guy doesn't deserve to hold this office. I mean, I hate to say it, because Mario Cuomo? Whatever. Charlie Weinstein. Call him whatever the fuck you want. Andrew Cuomo. There's a lot not to like about that guy, but if you only measure, you know, the job that he's done on dealing with this crisis in New York, yeah, you could probably nitpick things that he hasn't done, but just a one-to-one comparison to Donald Trump, just far and away, like, he's just getting, maybe it's because Donald Trump is so bad that Andrew Cuomo looks good. I don't know. My perspective might be a little bit biased, but yeah, I don't know. We deserve better.
I mean, even compared to the other governors that have been facing this, people like Gavin Newsom in California, Jay Inslee in Washington, Cuomo has done a comparatively good job. Right? Inslee in Washington State was, of course, the epicenter at the very beginning of the outbreak, and then New York, because of population density and number of people, became the new epicenter. But Washington is still the second highest number of cases in Washington, but they have yet to do any of these quarantines that California or Illinois or New York have. I mean, it's purely suggestive at this point. There has not been that implied threat of action like there has been in California. But you look at all the governors, and Cuomo is doing a comparatively good job. Better than Gavin Newsom, better than Inslee, better than Pritzker. So I don't think it's unfair at all or colored by perspective bias, especially when juxtaposed against Trump, to say that he's doing a fairly good job.
Yeah, I mean, we just deserve better leaders in the country. I think that's sort of obvious at this point. But, you know, China is, you know, copying off of what Jews do to try to provoke racism. Like, they've adopted this sort of cheap knockoff Chinese version of anti-racism to try to, you know, entangle the U.S. in this fake and gay battle. And yeah, I mean, this is just stupid. And the other thing that conservatives are doing as well, including Jack and all of the friends that follow in that milieu, is they are, where's the tweet from Jack? Yeah. So there's this, you know, people have seen this story by now, you know, Israel is even cracking. This is so bad that Israel is even cracking down on its own people with spy tech. And we did a whole series of deep dives on Israeli spy tech. And here you have Jack Posobiec out there quote tweeting somebody pushing for additional surveillance tools, saying in a pandemic, it makes sense to figure out who has come into contact with virus carriers as quickly as possible. And he's pushing for work with Palantir, Clearview AI, K-Health, you know, places that you've probably heard of before, organizations that you've heard doing this. So they're not just doing it in Israel. They want to do it in the United States to take advantage of this situation. This is, you know, people want to try to like ham-fistedly compare this this pandemic to 9/11. It is not 9/11 in the sense that it was done on purpose. I have yet to see evidence that that's the case. But it is like 9/11 in the sense that it will be used, just like any other crisis, to take more and more power, especially in the field of surveillance.
Right, and that's absolutely what they're planning now. Palantir is working with the CDC with something that seems innocuous, or would sound innocuous, just modeling the virus outbreak. But of course, to do modeling of the viral outbreak in the 21st century, you need access to social media data, much of which is protected from law enforcement and from government eyes, with the exception of data that is specifically access that is granted as a result of a court order, right? Normally, the government would need a court order to access most data, like location data, for example, or who you've been talking to on a social media app, or even your phone records. These are something that they need a subpoena to get, or a corresponding court order. But what they're doing now, and what they're looking to do, what the U.S. federal government is looking to do, is to work with Alphabet, Google, Facebook, Amazon, and Apple to analyze people's location data, right? The location data from your phones, to determine who you may have been in contact with, where you went, what businesses you patronized, and who you may have been around. Now, I mean, this may sound innocuous, like, oh, well, why, like, what's the problem with this, man? It's, well, because they're not going to turn the spigot off once it gets started, right? Once they have access to this data, it is going to be used for any multitude of other purposes. And what they're looking to do is actually make this access automatic whenever there is a national emergency announced. And, you know, for those in Rio Rhinelander, how many like national emergencies are there currently declared, right? Like national emergencies don't often, don't necessarily correspond to real legitimate public health crises, emergencies, but this is what they're doing. They want to have this access on a permanent, regular basis. And that is not all. It's not only location data. And it's so funny to look at the different places across the world where these tech companies, without people's knowledge, without Americans' knowledge, have turned other places into little laboratories on which to conduct experiments on people, right? And this is an example of this is in Haiti, where after the cholera outbreak in Haiti in 2010, the Palantir, Peter Thiel's company, was contracted by the CDC to monitor the situation and inform the CDC's response efforts, but also to obtain access to Haitians' text messages between Haitians, and to surveil on other tech platforms built by other companies, regardless of who built them. Right. So, you know, this is not just retracing people's steps and doing a breadcrumb trail to find out who you may have infected. This is looking at who you're talking to, who you're communicating with. And of course, this is not the first time we have seen these companies looking to do things like this. Refer back to Cybereason and their buddies at Canny AI and others. So funny how this all ties together, right? About how these companies war game about how they can protect the integrity of U.S. democracy. And part of that calculation is global pandemic. And sure enough, here we have it.
Yeah, they've done that. You have fresh off the presses, the DOJ wanting powers for indefinite detention. This is again, like, we're not going to put out, like, you know, spoopy conspiracy theories .usa lol / you know, I'm a retard for believing any of this .net or whatever. Is that even a correct URL? I don't know. But this is from the Politico. DOJ wants powers for indefinite detention. The Justice Department has quietly asked Congress for the ability to ask chief judges to detain people indefinitely without trial during emergencies, part of a push for new powers that comes as the coronavirus spreads throughout the United States. In one of the documents, the department proposed that Congress grant the Attorney General the power to ask the chief judge of any district court to pause court proceedings whenever the district court is full or partially closed by virtue of any natural disaster, civil disobedience, or other emergency situation. The proposal would also grant top judges broad authority to pause court proceedings during emergencies. It would apply to, quote, any statutes or rules of procedure otherwise affecting pre-arrest, post-arrest, pre-trial, trial, and post-trial procedures in criminal and juvenile proceedings in all civil process and proceedings, end quote. According to a draft of the legislative language the department shared with Congress that they want them to pass. In making the case for the change, the DOJ document wrote that individual judges can currently pause proceedings during emergencies, but that their proposal would make sure all judges in any district could handle emergencies in a consistent manner. We just want to be consistent, Goy. That's why we shipped this over to Congress on the weekend, and we're going to jam this in one of these emergency must-pass bills, and yeah, it's going to be great.
Right. And that's the thing, is these pieces of legislation, like, these are not things they are doing in preparation for something a long ways out, that there's going to be time for these measures to be debated, and they will undergo the public scrutiny, right, for people to get involved in the process. No, they're doing this under the cover of darkness. And what this piece of legislation would do, one, it would not have an expiration date, is the thing. So this would not terminate, say, when the national emergency is expired, or in July or in August. This would be just part now of U.S.
It's law. Like even better. And it's even better than the Patriot Act, which they have to renew from time to time. Like, this would just, it's sure. Just like part of the law now, you know, a little old thing, right? On the weekend, we did that one time. It's like, sure.
And it amounts to a suspension of habeas corpus, right? Because this doesn't just apply to people who have been convicted or are currently, it's not like only for the cases where the trial is ongoing and all of a sudden a meteor falls from the sky, they have to shut it down. No. This is pre-arrest, post-trial, pre-trial, trial, and post-trial detention. So pre-arrest is the key there, right? So, yeah, I mean, you like, that's just opening the door for all kinds of problems.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
It's
but that's not
all. We're going to red flag you personally, not just your gun, you. Like, you have been red flagged. You are in detention until we decide that you're not. Because, you know, virus and stuff.
Right. Exactly. And that's not the only piece of legislation they're trying to ram through. Under the cover of pandemic, there's also the Earn It bill that is currently being bounced around the Senate Judiciary Committee, sponsored by Lindsey Graham and Richard Blumenthal. Wow. Bipartisan. Which will strip Section 230 protections from any website that doesn't adhere to a list of best practices as defined by Attorney General Bill Barr. That best practices list will be created by a government commission headed by Bill Barr, who, as you know, if you're a regular listener to the show, his number one issue since ascending to the throne at DOJ has been the elimination of encrypted communication online. That has been his number one priority. That was why they did the song and dance with the big tech breakup investigations, was to try to force concessions out of them in the realm of encryption. They didn't get them. And now they're sensing coronavirus as an opportunity for them to ram this through without scrutiny. And they're doing this under the guise of, preventing child predation or something, right? If you want encryption online, they would argue, it's because you're a child molester. It's because you have kiddie porn. It's like, no, that's not at all what this is about. This is about protecting people's rights to speak freely without censorship and without being tracked and monitored, but not according to Richard Blumenthal. And dude, this is some high-level pill pull here. Because they didn't put the word encryption in the bill, they're insisting it doesn't affect encryption. This bill says nothing about encryption, Richard Blumenthal said at today's hearing. Have you found a word in this bill about encryption? He asked one witness. And he's right, technically. This bill doesn't mention encryption, but it gives the authority to define these best practices to Attorney General Barr and to people like the vice president at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, who explicitly said that any best practices list must include the elimination of encryption and pre-screening by tech companies. So tech companies will be required, if they want to keep their Section 230 protections, companies would then be required to pre-screen every single message sent on their service. And they'd be held legally responsible for messages sent by others that were found to be objectionable or offensive.
Yeah, well.
And so, and this is happening under the cover of the virus, and nobody's talking about it.
Nope, nobody's talking about it except for Lindsey Graham. He's looking pretty bad, too. The trick to doing Lindsey Graham is just to close the air passageway through your nose and then just start talking like this and do a little bit of XDD with it. And you have Lindsey Graham very easily. It's a very easy one to do. There are other accents that I can't do very well. Sven takes the cake for being able to do the most wide range of impressions very, very well. Of everybody on the alt-right, except for me, though. The dude-like guy, okay, guy, yeah. But again, of course, nobody likes their own impression, but that's how that goes. That's fine. So, yeah, meanwhile, while they're doing that to you at home, want to see the true face of evil in this country? Reuters.
This is appalling. Yeah.
Reuters. U.S. to Iran. Coronavirus won't save you from sanctions. So while Iran is having, what is it, a person dying every 10 minutes and 50 becoming infected every hour, the United States, this is from Reuters, sent a blunt message to Iran this week. The spread of coronavirus will not save you from U.S. sanctions that are choking off its oil revenues and isolating its economy. The United States, which argues that its, quote, maximum pressure campaign to curb Iran's nuclear, missile, and regional activities, alleged nuclear, missile, and who cares even if they are, right? Like, other than Israel, nobody cares. Everybody's like, sure, fine, right. Do what you want. Does not stop the flow of humanitarian goods, imposed new sanctions last week. And so they have blacklisted five companies from doing any trade in Iran's petrochemicals. And they've also stopped the flow of humanitarian goods into that country as well. They're trying to sanction that, and some analysts are begging the Trump administration to speed the flow of humanitarian goods into Iran, but there is no evidence that that is happening. In fact, it looks like they are blacklisting Iran from this. And, you know, if there's anything, you know, the United States has zero ground on which to stand in saying anything to anyone about human rights. I mean, this is appalling. But even if this weren't happening, the things that the United States does to its own citizens, its own people, remember, this is not your country anymore. It's not our country. It belongs to somebody else. We are a conquered people. But the things that they're doing to us, it's human rights violations every single day. And the idea that China is somehow violating its own people's civil rights, it's like, United States, you're not in a position to make that call, especially with headlines like coronavirus isn't going to save you from sanctions. You know, they're talking about like the whole world coming together. It's like, no, this is the most malicious, evil thing that you could possibly think of, is to kick somebody when they're down. This is, you know, in the middle of a fight, this is the United States, like when the guy's on the ground, you know, tapping out and saying that's enough. This is the United States kicking them in the balls and then blowing their brains out. This is, you know, this should not make anybody proud. And there'll be MAGA-tards out there justifying this. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the very same people out there defending Chuck Weinstein are going to be doing this as well. I mean, they're already doing the bit for the surveillance state. They're already on the side of you know, this slow creep of taking over and suppressing your free speech even further. Why wouldn't they be on the side of Iran? This is becoming very embarrassing if you're on that side of things these days.
Why wouldn't they be on the side of the U.S. against Iran? Yeah, I mean, isn't it great and awesome to see the U.S. swinging their power around and taking on the world? Isn't it? Isn't it some great shows of nationalism? Isn't this what you want? No, it's not. And the fact that they are using this to not only to maintain the sanctions, the fact that they aren't relieving the pressure of sanctions at this time, I mean, that is bad enough, right? Iran was for a while the second hardest hit country behind China, now been passed by Italy, and Italy, I think, is in first now. But the Iranians were going through a lot trying to manage this crisis with the sanctions that already existed, right? They've been sanctioned for years, and they haven't been able to build up the reserves of these humanitarian supplies. And now to continue, after you know that they are dealing with rampant infection in their country, to continue ratcheting down the pressure, to continue targeting the avenues their state uses to make money and their companies use to make money, which they can then use to buy humanitarian goods from other countries, countries that are not as evil as these United States, trying to block Iranians from surviving this. You're cutting off the revenue that Iran is using to buy those humanitarian supplies. So even if the United States says, oh, we're not blocking masks, we're not blocking respirators, well, you're cutting off the money that they need to go out and purchase these things from other countries. So, I mean, this is absolutely evil. It's appalling what the U.S. does to foreign countries on that their only crime. You know, Iran, how long has it been since the last U.S. Personnel was killed in an Iranian attack? Hasn't it been years since that's happened? But well, their only crime...
If you listen to our government, it happened last weekend. I don't know. We don't really know if it's ever really happened. I mean, they just make stuff up. I mean, all this stuff is right. Just made up. And until there's a regime in our country that we can trust and is honest, I mean, I don't believe anything that they say. Why would you?
No.
Why would you?
No, and this is what happens, and their only crime is seeking independence from this global financial system and being a threat to greater Israel.
Yep, exactly.
And for that, they have to be punished, and all of their civilians have to die,
yep,
according to the United States.
Yeah, and this is a very weak time for the United States as well. I mean, I saw that they just successfully test-launched a hypersonic glide body, which is essentially a missile. This is what they're doing. They're test-launching because they know that this is a very weak time, and this is a very fragile time. And, I mean, certainly I love my country. I'm an American. I believe in the people of the United States. But you know, it's kind of frustrating to watch these lies unfold, and especially when these things are so avoidable. I mean, as I said in the first part of the show, pandemic was a when, not if scenario. And when you have Donald Trump going out there and mealy-mouthed saying, how could anyone have seen this coming? Nobody could have possibly foreseen this happening. Well, thank you to a caller on Jazz and Jesse for pointing this out, but we have three instances, at least three, of this exact situation being wargamed out by the government, both the Obama administration and the Trump administration, and them seeing the weak points and that this could be a problem for the country, and they ignored it. The first one was during the transition. This was something that had been undertaken during the Obama administration. And during the transition, it says, this is according to the Politico, in a sober briefing, Trump's incoming team learned that the disease was an emerging pandemic. They were talking about the scenario that took place. A strain of novel influenza known as H9N2, and that health systems were crashing in Asia, overwhelmed by the demand. Health officials warned that this could be the worst influenza pandemic since 1918, Trump's aides were told. Soon, they heard cases were popping up in California and Texas. There's no briefing that can prepare you for a worldwide pandemic, Sean Spicer plan trusted in the reaction to the news. At least 30 representatives of Trump's team, many of them soon to be cabinet members and now are all basically don't exist in the administration anymore. I think Wilbur Ross is still around, but Rick Perry, gone. Michael Flynn, gone.
They're either inmates or on K Street.
Yeah, Rex Tillerson, gone. And they were told to sort of look into this and, hey, guys, just want to make you aware, this is something that we've been looking into. This could become a problem. We're long overdue for something like this. Certainly, we had to deal with Ebola under the Obama administration. We're just, you know, passing this along. And then 6 months ago, they did this exercise again. 6 months ago, this was done to practice, to see what it would be like, what would happen, smoke test to see if America could handle a coronavirus. And this was called Crimson Contagion. The scenario was imagining an influenza pandemic, which was simulated by the Trump administration's Department of Health and Human Services in a series of exercises that ran from last January of 2019 through August of 2019. Simulation sobering results contained in a draft report dated October 2019 that was not previously reported on drove home just how underfunded, underprepared, and uncoordinated the federal government would be for a life-or-death battle with a virus for which no treatment existed. The draft report, marked not to be disclosed, laid out in stark detail repeated cases of confusion in the exercise. Federal agencies jockeyed over who was in charge. This is kind of like, you know, FEMA bidding against state officials for personal protective equipment, Donald, right? State officials and hospitals struggled to figure out what kind of equipment was stockpiled or available. Cities and states went their own ways on school closings. It's just funny how this all plays out. Many of the potentially deadly consequences of a failure to address the shortcomings are now playing out in an all too real fashion across the country. It was hardly the first warning for the nation's leaders. Three times over the past 4 years, the U.S. government across two administrations had grappled in depth with what a pandemic would look like, identifying likely shortcomings, and in some cases, recommending a specific action. What the scenario makes clear, however, is that his own administration, Donald's, had already modeled a similar pandemic and understood its trajectory. However, asked at a news briefing on Thursday about the government's preparedness, Donald Trump responded, "Nobody knew there would be a pandemic or epidemic of this proportion. Nobody has ever seen anything like this before, ever, at any time." So, yeah, guy. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like your own administration would like to have a word with you on that. Simulation after simulation after simulation that's been done. And, you know, some of this, right, like these simulations and war games they do, sure, you can learn some things from these, and you can identify maybe things you hadn't thought of before that could be complicating factors in an outbreak like this. But how about dozens and dozens of rural hospitals closing across America. I mean, this is not something that that nobody's known about. They've known about this happening and nothing's been done. How about Americans being more unhealthy than ever before and not being able to go to the doctor because of rising healthcare costs and living with these underlying conditions they can't get treated? Nothing's being done about that. Like, let's just let that ride. So, like, all of these different, you can war game all you like, and these war games are good, and it's excellent to know, it's not excellent to know, but it's very damning to know that this administration and administrations previous have known how disastrous this could be. But it's like all of these other factors that are contributing to making this worse than it needs to be. Like, there's so many things that could be changed, but nobody has any energy to do it. Nobody with any power seems to have any energy to do anything about it.
Yeah, I mean, Homeland Security, Health and Human Services, the White House's National Security Council, they were all aware of this. And they were aware of the potential for a respiratory virus outbreak originating in China. And what does Donald Trump say on Wednesday? Nobody ever thought of numbers like this before. It's like, yeah, they did. They did a study. And part of the problem is the information bubble that Trump is in. And I'm not saying that as a cope. I'm just saying that that's not how the government is supposed to work. It's not supposed to be channeled through Jared Kushner, who under every other measure shouldn't have been within within 5,000 miles of American government. He should be back in his own country. But then you have John Bolton in 2018, who ousted the guys who had done a lot of the work on this. And this is when they say that Donald Trump collapsed the pandemic office. This is part of it. John Bolton folded the office into an existing office dedicated to studying the weapons of mass destruction in what Trump officials called at the time a, quote, logical consolidation. Yeah, totally logical if your only focus is providing for the future and sustenance of greater Israel. Asked about that shift on March 13th, Donald Trump told a reporter that was a nasty question before adding, I don't know anything about it. Writing on Twitter the next day, Mr. Bolton lashed out at critics who said the shift had reflected disinterest in pandemic threats. Quote, claims that streamlining NSC structures impaired our nation's biodefense are false, Bolton tweeted. Global health remained a top NSC priority. Yeah, sure it did, John. Sure it did.
Right. Yeah, shoved in the basement, like behind some filing cabinets. Like, oh yeah, you're the pandemic guy. You work here now.
Yeah.
Get to work. Throw those essential reports right in the bin.
Yeah. And then on top of that, so as if it's not enough to have the Obama administration during the transition telling you about this problem, they didn't have to do that, but they felt like for the good of the country, it was good to tell Donald Trump about this. And that, you know, I mean, what was Donald Trump's inauguration speech about? Ending American carnage? What do we have now, Donald? Mm. What do you call that now? Did you end the American carnage as the crime rates tick up in all these cities? No, you haven't done shit. You've made it worse. But here we go with this. U.S. intelligence reports from January and February warned about a likely pandemic. They were issuing ominous classified warnings in January and February about the global danger posed by the coronavirus, while President Trump and lawmakers played down the threat and failed to take action that might have slowed the spread of the pathogen. This is not MSNBC reporting. This is not CNN. We all were saying at the time that the just the flu bro narrative was fake, gay, and retarded. This is not a nothing burger. But the nothing burgerists went on all the way up until March 7th. Donald Trump was still tweeting about, oh, this is how many people die from the flu. We only have this many deaths in America. Isn't this great? This guy is writing his own political epitaph. All of these things that he's saying are going to be replayed as sound bites in 6 months. And he's just going to look like a buffoon. And, you know, this is a major problem. I mean, these intelligence agencies were warning you in January, and you ignored them because they're part of a deep state conspiracy to destroy my presidency. It's like, look, I get the whole Russia narrative is fake and gay and it's part of a Jew op, but these people were saying, like, yeah, like there's probably an issue here. And even if these intelligence reports were heavily lacquered with anti-China bullshit on top of them, I would at least try to look at this and see, hey, maybe there's a problem. And by January, people knew that there was something going on in China that we needed to worry about, and they should have taken action then. But no, Dow 30,000, James. That's what Donald was hoping for.
Well, I don't think that's just a joke either, the Dow 30,000 thing. I think that really was part of their calculation and a very key component.
He said it.
Because they were only...
He said it as he like meandered around in one of these Q&A sessions. He was saying like, oh, we were looking for Dow 30,000. It got to 29.5. 29.5.
Oh my gosh.
29.5. And you know, he was doing the calculations in his head that there was going to be a day. He probably even had the tweets saved as drafts, ready to hit launch. And nope, not going to happen, Donald. You're never going to get Dow 30,000. You're probably not even going to get a second term. I would be shocked.
Yeah, all those memes and graphics at the RNC, they were just like, right, like finger hovering over the mouse, ready to tweet about Dow 30,000. Our economy, our great president. Up in smoke.
Done. Totally done. Well, speaking of totally done, we have lovingly and in an act of great self-sacrifice have put forward almost 4 hours of content and have dealt with internet disruptions and power disruptions and all kinds of other stuff. But I hope you guys, honestly, I'm talking to the paid chads that are left here. We kicked all the free fags out. I hope you guys are staying safe. Please take care of your families. And if you're not connected and you're not involved, please get involved and so that you have a community of other guys to hang out with and ride out this storm, because it is a storm. Don't be stupid. Don't go out. Don't take risks. And we'll all get through this. Again, I hope it turns out, I hope 6 weeks from now we're just like, oh, you know, that sucked. Moving on. But I'm every indication that we have, except Chinese reporting no new deaths, is a bad piece of news. Is a bad piece of news. Just while we were doing the show. They have grounded all flights in New York. Because they don't have enough people to show up and do stuff. I mean, talk about news cucked. So we're going to try to get this show out as fast as possible before we get news cucked anymore. But yeah, not good.
Yeah. Well, and don't think that you, again, because you're young, because you're healthy, because you're in shape, that you don't need to take these very standard precautions when you do go out. If you do, I mean, and I get it, like people don't have emergency stores. It is very expensive to prep for months of not going out, months of groceries. But don't think that you're immune from this or that you're exempt because you know so much about it. Like, oh, I'm smart. I'm not going to get sick. I'm too smart to get sick. And then 3 days later, coofing, 105 degree fever. So do the bit, right? Wear the gloves. If you can, wear the respirator, wear the mask. If you have to go out, choose when you go out very carefully. Make sure you're changing gloves as frequently as possible, disinfecting, washing hands, all of these things. And look, it may sound tedious to do, and it may sound like an annoyance, but your health is worth it. The health of people around you is worth it. Your families are worth it. Just do it and don't go outside unless you absolutely have. I mean, you can go in your backyard or something, but like, don't wade into the Costco unless you absolutely have to. I wouldn't even say that. I would. Yeah, you get it. Be safe.
Yep. All right. Well, that'll be it for the weekend, and we will catch you guys on the midweek show. Catch you guys later.